Hi, Katie here, just hopping on quick before the episode to remind you I am co-leading a pilgrimage to Ireland this coming October 2024. Come join me and Christy Eisinger on a magical tour through the Emerald Isle, Our Lady of Knock, St. Patrick's Holy Mountain, the Rock of Cashel, the Cliffs of Moher, ancient monasteries, high tea at a castle, traditional music, sheep herding demonstrations, a literary pub crawl. This trip has it all, and we've made sure to keep a pace that is both adventurous and relaxing, with time to explore on your own, make new friends, pray, eat, and travel carefree with the expert local guides provided by Select International. Check out the show notes to download the brochure and sign up today. Sláinte! Hi, I'm Katie Marquette, and you're listening to Born of Wonder.
And here there is something more than just a transient experience.
It's about being. It's about the things that matter to me. It's about the white spaces between the paragraphs.
Then God said, "Let there be light."
The mistake you always made, Doc, trying to love a wild thing.
And welcome to Born of Wonder. I'm Katie Marquette, and on this podcast, we explore anything and everything that inspires wonder and awe in the world. And you can't say that I don't follow through on that slogan, right? Anything and everything. Last week, we had the amazing writer, theologian, wonderful speaker, Dr. Larry Chapp, runner of the operator of the Catholic Worker Farm, the Dorothy Day Catholic Worker Farm, talking all about Christian ethics and living in the world today and culture and farming and making Christianity weird again. And today we're talking about Taylor Swift. So I believe everything is open for discussion. I think there are so many angles on so many of these things, are worth discussing. So depending on where you're coming from, maybe you saw the title of this episode and you got really excited, or you said, maybe I'll skip that one. I hope you don't, even if you're not a Swiftie, even if you're not a Taylor Swift fan. Spoiler alert, I am. But even if you're not, you know, Taylor Swift is a force in the culture. The woman is causing earthquakes with her concerts. She's traveling the globe, you know, hitting five continents. Millions of people are attending this Eras Tour concert. This is a big deal. She's bringing people together. She's bringing people together across a wide variety of backgrounds and beliefs. And there's just so much to discuss here on so many angles. And I won't even sort of go into a long spiel of an introduction, just because I think the conversation I had with Rachel Sherlock was so great. And I just want to get pretty much right into that. If you're not familiar with Rachel, we sort of talk about her work a fair amount in the beginning, but she's been a guest on this podcast before. We did an episode on Nora Ephron and You've Got Mail. And we also did an episode about the joy of letter writing. So if you listen to those episodes, you know what a smart, delightful person she is. It's always just a thrill to talk with her. We just fall into things like we have been old friends for years, and it's so exciting. It always reminds me of that C.S. Lewis quote about friendship, of like when you find somebody and you share some interest and you say, "What, you two? I thought I was the only one." And that was definitely experience for Rachel and I when we sort of mutually followed each other's podcasts and got to talking, you know, really in order to be guests on each other's podcasts. And we have so much in in common, and I hope we get to see her when we go to Dublin, hopefully going to Dublin this coming October 2024. If you're interested in signing up, I encourage you to follow the link in the show notes. I'm doing that pilgrimage with Christy Eisinger. You can find me online at bornofwonder.com. Head on over to Substack, link in the show notes, where I also, with a lot of these podcast episodes, I'll sort of share an accompanying essay, which is what I did for this episode as well. You can hear all about the my country life, my country roots, loving country music, riding around in pickup trucks, listening to T.S. Eliot. Like, this, where's my mind? Listening to Taylor Swift. You know, so yeah, you can hear that whole backstory, read about that whole backstory on Substack, follow the link in the show notes. I hope everyone's doing well. Felt like summertime today, and don't hold me to this too much, but I think I'm going to decide to embrace summer this year. I just, you know, I'm loving the warm weather right now. I really am. The flowers are blooming. Weeds have not taken over yet. It's beautiful. Can be outside all day with the kids. It's just gorgeous. We've rearranged furniture in like every room in our house for some reason. You know, inspiration struck, trying to make the house, you know, make sense for us. And we moved the desk and my sort of office recording setup into the corner of our bedroom so that we could make the sort of tiny office room into a guest room, since kids have taken over the other bedrooms. So we'd like to, you know, be a source of hospitality, invite guests to stay and things like that. So but I'm actually loving it. This is so cool. Like, if you rearrange furniture, it can rearrange things in your head too. So that's my little piece of advice. If you can find one thing to maybe move around in your house, it may open up all sorts of things for you mentally. So anyway, let's get into it. Let's do it. Taylor Swift, Rachel Sherlock, let's go. Today on the podcast, I am so excited to be joined again by my friend Rachel Sherlock to talk about this amazing topic of Taylor Swift. What a treat. We were just talking before we hit record here. We had to just kind of stop ourselves from gushing too much, ready to talk about Taylor so that we would, you know, have plenty to talk about here on the episode. But Rachel, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm so excited to talk to you about this.
Oh, this is like my ideal way to spend my evening. So this is great. This is probably what I would be doing to my mirror in the bathroom of an evening anyway, just talking about Taylor Swift.
I know. Yeah, my husband is glad to have a break. So, so Rachel, you've been a guest on the podcast before, and I think we by now have a fair amount of overlap in our listenership. But for those who don't know you, do you mind just giving a brief introduction to who you are and the sort of work you do, your podcast, everything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I also run a podcast. It's called Risking Enchantment. Katie has been on several times and will be on again in the future. And yeah, it's been wonderful to get to know Katie through doing podcasts. But similar to Born of Wonder, my podcast is about a lot of art and culture and literature, but from a Catholic perspective. We take a pretty broad range to that. So, you know, things like pop music even, but a lot of literature, and we kind of do deep dives on some kind of niche topic sometimes. But I like to, I essentially find friends who have gone down a rabbit hole on something, and I go, let's do a podcast on that, which is great. And I work kind of in publishing and publishing adjacent areas. So I'm very interested in literature. I do a little bit of writing and some freelance editing. That's kind of where I come from. I love seeing the world through my faith and that kind of Catholic perspective. So I bring that to everything that I do. Risking Enchantment, like I said, is the name of the podcast. If you're looking for me online, Rachel Sherlock usually brings up most things. If not, my handle is usually Seeking Watson, which is ironic because I have a flatmate whose name is Watson. So I'm not actually seeking any Watson anymore, but I made that when I was a teenager.
I will never get over the Sherlock and Watson thing. I mean, that's just, it's too good. If you guys don't have like a series of crime solving books someday, I don't know, some missed opportunities.
Seriously.
So you'll love Rachel's podcast if you want to go check it out. Also, she lives in Dublin. And if any listeners end up joining me in Ireland this coming October, we're hoping to meet up with Rachel, get her to give us a little locals tour. So that would be really fun as well. But let's get going. Taylor Swift, so excited to talk about her. I'm a fan. I'm a huge fan. But even if you don't like her, I think this is an important conversation because she's out there. You can't ignore her. As of 2024, she's released 243 songs, including covers, but excluding her re-recorded songs, 14 albums, named Top Artist of the Year in 2023 by both Spotify and Apple Music. She was streamed 26.1 billion times on Spotify just in the time frame of between January and November 2023. So she's a force to be reckoned with for sure. And if you are a Taylor Swift fan, you know that there is a wide range of people who love her music, all ages, genders, religion, and she doesn't seem to show much sign of stopping soon. She's even the center of some conspiracy theories now, which is when you really know you've made it if you're, if you're making the conspiracy theory loops. So Rachel, what's your experience with Taylor Swift? Have you always been a fan? What were your first encounters with her music?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely describe myself as a Taylor Swift fan. I definitely heard about her pretty early on. I remember being in high school and hearing some of like the Fearless album and knowing some of those songs. Unfortunately, at the time, I was being an insufferable teenager and thought I was way too cool for pop music. And I kind of continued that on because I went and did a music degree, which, you know, everything was alt rock, indie folk, which I still love. And I will say that I maintain a very broad interest in music and I have a lot of interest in genres. And I love music. And so I really enjoy exploring all kinds of new artists. But as I got older, I realized I didn't have to preclude the super famous pop music from enjoying the other types of music as well. So, I was at university when I started to actually properly listen to her. Believe it or not, at that stage, it was when Speak Now came out. At that stage, I thought I was a little late joining the bandwagon. And I thought maybe I should, like, if I'd wanted to be a real fan, I should have gotten into her a couple of years before. But I was mainly introduced by my friend Dorina, who ended up being a housemate of mine at university. And she was a huge Taylor Swift fan. In fact, it's a long story, but I essentially met her because she was a fan of Taylor Swift and saw somebody else listening to Taylor Swift and made friends with them, who then made friends with me. So it's kind of a foundation to that friendship. And yeah, ever since then, I remember Red coming out and her listening to it and being like getting into it at that stage. But it was 1989. That was definitely the first one where I was all in, so excited and loved that album and have loved her albums since then. And yeah, it's definitely something I still really enjoy. And I was just saying to Katie before we started recording, I believe this episode is going to come out days before the new Taylor Swift album drops. So this is perfect timing. We've got a whole new album to look forward to very soon.
Yeah, and it's very fortuitous timing. We're recording this about 2 weeks before the album's going to be released. I had it in my head that it was releasing later than that. And Rachel was like, no, it's releasing that week. So, I mean, this was, God is interested in Taylor Swift. That's all I'm saying. He arranged this recording schedule. Everything happened the way it was supposed to. But yeah, I mean, I was a fan of Taylor Swift when she was, I remember when, you know, Tim McGraw came out, when her first, you know, song came out, because I was a country music kid. I grew up in the country, riding pickup trucks and listening to country music. And I remember when she was like the new kid on the block, and my sister and I would watch the top 20 countdown on GAC, which was Great American Country. And I remember her like being interviewed, and like she was like this kid, you know, and they were all like, oh, like, good for you. This young lady really has some talent. So I remember her being the soundtrack, to like, you know, she was in the country music loop. And then what I guess there are certainly people who are more like ardent Taylor Swift fans than me, but I've just always been there, like a steady fan. And there've been albums I've been more excited than others, but she's been the background to so many things. Like Red was in college, I remember that. And, you know, 1989 was when I just graduated. It was graduate school. And like, I have, like, her music was just in the background to so many moments in my life that it ended up being very relevant for. And I think that kind of speaks to some of the things we're going to talk about, is that so many people feel like they've like grown up with her. And I feel that way, you know, we're all sort of similar age too. I feel like we really lucked in, like we're like the Harry Potter generation, we're the Taylor Swift generation. Like we have some really good, cool things going on here. But So first of all, I should mention before we start talking about the Eras Tour is that you are going. You should talk a little bit about that. She's going to the Eras Tour. Very excited, very jealous. So
yeah, I was just saying, I almost feel like guilty for admitting that I am going twice. So she's playing three nights, but there was only two announced when the tickets were first released. And as I mentioned, my friend Darina and I, we like, you know, our shared love of Taylor Swift has continued to be a big part of our friendship. And so we had agreed that we would both try to get tickets, but like do divide and conquer. So one night and the other night, because you kind of essentially had to choose one day and queue for that day online. And so we said, well, we'd both try and get tickets and we'd take each other. So we were really lucky. Our tickets are way at the back, but I mean, we're just delighted to be there. And we were able to get some tickets. So we were able to take some friends, which is going to be really nice. And it didn't cost us a total arm and a leg. If anyone's listening to this and thinking that I was one of those ones with like 20,000 for tickets or something insane like that, they're probably, you know, on the expensive side for tickets, but they were not, you know,
they're in the reasonable realm for sure. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Rachel's not like concert money bags over here. Like,
but we, yeah, really looking forward to it. We technically went to the rep tour together, except that I had queued up with somebody else and we both were able to get tickets and, but they weren't together. So we were at the rep tour, me and Dorita together, but we weren't actually sitting beside each other. We were like, but yeah, so we're going, it's at the end of June in Dublin. So I have that to look forward to. And I am certainly, I will very much appreciate being able to go to those concerts.
And we will definitely check in for I want to hear, you know, live what it was like. So we'll live vicariously through you, but, really, yes. The Eras Tour and sort of the phenomena that it has become is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about Taylor Swift, other than just, you know, talk about her music. But it's kind of a rare moment of cultural connection and unity. Taylor definitely has her, you know, her haters, as she loves to remind us. But she also has a lot of fans, and these fans are finding commonality across a lot of differences. As I talked about before, she has, you know, all kinds of fans all over the world. She's hitting five continents, circling the globe, sort of reminiscent of some Beatles mania going on here. One concert in LA caused seismic activity, an actual earthquake. Fans were so loud. So what do you make of this? I feel like there's something to be said here about this one pop artist. Well, really all kinds of artists, as we you know, folk artists, pop artists, country artists, connecting so many people around the world.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful. And I think it's interesting because this is absolutely true. And I think that she is a uniting figure, but it is incredible how isolated or echo bubble our world can be. Because I was just talking to a friend of mine a while back whose mother is a teacher, and they had like a dress up day at school, and she dressed up as the cover of Evermore with the like coat and the braid. And a bunch of her students had never heard of Taylor Swift. So it is kind of crazy to me how it's possible even in this day for the biggest star in the world to not be known everywhere. Yeah. But as much as it is possible to be sort of universally known, I think she is. And I think it is actually quite a wonderful thing, because I think, you know, I mentioned it myself, like it's very easy to be snobby about pop music and think that if it's for the masses, it's not good. And I think that she really sort of puts that to the test and writes really great music that is universally interesting and applicable and speaks to people. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I love about how she does that is that she doesn't make her music as generic as possible so that it applies to the most amount of people. She actually writes very personal and like with a lot of personal details in it often, and specifically her, like she is, especially as a pop singer who's also very much a singer-songwriter, like she is not interested in singing a bunch of songs that aren't from her perspective or by her or that kind of, you know, that it could have been written by anyone. That she is presenting herself and her soul when she's on stage and through her music. And I think what's beautiful about how much she connects with the whole world, like the audience that she has, is that actually even when, and maybe even especially because when you make things personal, you actually get to the human experience, which is common to everyone, and that we have more in common than we necessarily think. And that, you know, you can be a continent away, two continents away, and writing about heartbreak or falling in love or like the experience of being a young person in a big city, or, you know, the relationship that you have with your parents. These things are actually common to people, even from very specific perspectives. So I think that's one of the things that I think is so moving about seeing that she's so popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point about, you know, she is quite specific in her lyrics. You know, people are sort of always famously sort of trying to figure out who exactly she was talking about and things like that. But, you know, like one of my favorite songs is Cornelia Street. And like that is like such a, if you really listen to the lyrics of that, it's so specific. It's clearly about like literally an instance that happened to her, you know, like they're in the backseat drunk on the drinks from the bar. They're going down Cornelia, like where she rented a house. You know, it's like it's a specific place and specific experience, but really like what she's talking about is universal, because she's talking about how she's like afraid of losing that relationship, because then she could never go back to that. The memories of that place would change for her. So it's like, even if you're not in the midst of a breakup or something like that, you know, the feeling of like sort of the bittersweet feeling of good memories, of good moments. And it's just, you know, it's just powerful. And I think it speaks to the idea too. And maybe you have experienced this, of course, both of us on a much, much smaller scale, but like, I'm always surprised with podcast episodes, kind of the more sort of specific I am in my like weird interests, the more people are interested, more people reach out and be interested, even if they hadn't heard of it. Maybe there's something that speaks to them about it in its specificity. And it's sort of like this weird tension of like, the more specific you are, the more universal you are. And I think that Taylor Swift definitely does that.
Yeah. And that, you know, I think it's interesting, not that I wouldn't want to categorize her as solely a pop artist. And I think we're going to come to that, the way that she explores different genres. And as you already mentioned, she started off in country. But if I'm going to say pop music in the sense that like popular music, it is like widely received and widely listened to, and also often in the sort of pop genre as a type of music. I think there can be a sense in which people who maybe pride themselves on their musical taste, or, you know, consider themselves to be tastemakers, can look at something like Taylor Swift and say, well, like I said, if it's so broadly applicable, then is it really saying anything? Mm. And I think in some ways her genre switching has really showed people up for that opinion, because she shows that she can do these like smaller numbers and still have them be widely applicable. Like I always think of, there's one of the track that I love from 1989 called Wildest Dreams. And she did a cover of it for the Grammy Museum, where it's just her on a guitar singing the song. And there's a bunch of very well-intentioned and nice comments under it being like, wow, I'd never realized this was such a good song. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I love a good acoustic cover of a pop song. Like there's nothing wrong with them. They're great. But the song was still meaningful and interesting when it had a pop sound to it. Like because something has a full production. I often think about her collaborator, producer Jack Antonoff, that she's worked with for many years now, and I'm a huge fan of him and his music. He's in a band called Bleachers. I've just come back from England, where I went to their concert. I'm a little bit of a concert junkie. and he talks about, and you won't be surprised to learn that he started working with her on 1989, and that he also does a lot of very kind of big 80s sounds. And he talks about that the 80s as being a time in which things that have a big, exuberant, full sound to them can also be the things that have the most heart and the most emotion and the most meaning. And that, you know, sometimes we now associate that with more intimate settings or with smaller artists, and that it's absolutely there. But I just think that it can be both. And I, like I said, I go to a lot of concerts. I'm just as likely to be at a concert with 50 people as I am at the Taylor Swift with 50,000 people. Like, to me, it's so exciting to any time that you can find someone who's able to make that connection with an audience. It's so impressive that like that you can actually reach out to that many people with the art that you're creating and the music you're creating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I did want to talk about the different eras. But before we get to that, you brought up an interesting point just as in our notes as we were thinking about this. And you gave a talk sort of on this topic of sort of girlhood, womanhood, and how like the summer of 2023 with Barbie, everything, this was like the summer of girlhood. And I think it's also was the summer of like shared cultural experiences in some ways, you know, sort of the Oppenheimer, Barbie sort of competition at the box office. Like that hadn't been seen in a while. You know, people hadn't been really going to the movies. There weren't as many big movies that everybody was watching, which is one of the reasons I was so excited when Barbie came out. Was like, I'm a huge Greta Gerwig fan, so I was excited on that level. But I was like, just very excited that everybody was talking about it and that we were having sort of very interesting conversations about womanhood and self and motherhood and all sorts of things. It was inspiring a lot of conversation. But what did you have some thoughts you wanted to add on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I agree that I think especially, probably coming out of COVID and lockdown, I think it's been very refreshing to see how much people are excited to make events of things and make something shared that you do in person. And I think we're going to talk about that a little bit later as well, but that it's something that you go out and do. And one of the things that it reminded me of is just that idea of pomp and ceremony that I think, you know, people getting dressed up, like people got dressed up for Barbie and people are getting dressed up for the Eras tour. And people are, you know, I think even people were, because they had tied Barbie to Oppenheimer, then people were getting dressed up for Oppenheimer. And, you know, I think that that's actually a really beautiful thing. And I think it's a healthy thing that we see more of the sense of making an occasion of something. I always think of C.S. Lewis has an amazing quote. It's quite a long one. I won't read it all out, but on pomp and ceremony at the start of his, I think it's strangely at the start of his, it's his preface to Paradise Lost. But he says at one point that to understand like the true meaning of pomp, to recover it, you have to think of like a court ball or a coronation. And he says that in an age where everyone puts on his oldest clothes to be happy in, you must reawake the simpler state of mind in which people put on gold and scarlet to be happy in. Mm. And I think that in terms of seeing how much people are investing in making an occasion and getting the outfits and the sequins and the makeup and all of that, that like, this is an innocent, more innocent way of experiencing the world, which is that this is an occasion I'm excited for. I'm going to get dressed up for it.
Yeah.
And I think that can apply to men as well. And certainly I don't want to caveat Taylor Swift as a women's only artist. In fact, other than my friend Arena, all of the people that I talk about Taylor Swift most with, I think most of them are men. I think pretty much all my friends I'm bringing to the Eras tour are men. So it is not exclusionary at all, but that there is something about the female experience that she's expressing. And I think it's wonderful to see, you know, I think some people have pushed back and said, well, it would be nice if we saw a similar elevation of manliness in a positive way. And that's true, but I don't think that that needs to necessarily take away from the fact that it's actually very exciting to me to see celebrations of things that are traditionally more feminine and even like in the ways that the crowd expresses themselves. And again, I think you want to talk about the crowds a little bit later, but that association of these crowds with kindness and patience and encouragement and support and it, you know, these things that are have maybe been slightly bracketed by being like, oh, those are Disney princess kind of things, and that we should be just telling stories about women with like strong, fierce roles of blah 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 or whatever it is, that like actually we're having a moment where we're celebrating and identifying those things in girlhood, in womanhood. And I think it's really exciting to see that kind of celebration. And with that, again, like dressing up, like all of those fun things that have felt too frivolous for women to be expressing. And actually now we're kind of seeing some kind of reclaiming of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's something there too about like, you know, women, I think for a long time, it was like women had to be very like cutthroat with each other, because if you were going to like make it in this man's world, you know, you might have to trample some other women along the way. You know, there just wasn't enough room for everybody. But there's a feeling here of like women supporting each other and like getting excited together and like doing these fun things. Cause I think women are maybe differently, not uniquely so, but differently from men, sort of oriented toward community. I mean, like I have two little girls and I have friends with little boys the same age, and they do interact differently. Like girls are more relational from a young age. And it's just like how we're built. We're meant to be in community. There's like a really funny Onion article, and it's like it's one of my favorites that always just makes me laugh. It's like the title is like group of women go out for drinks to validate the expletive out of each other. And it's like, it's just so true, because we've all done that where we like go out with our girlfriends and we're like, you are so much better than him, and like you're the best, you are so smart, everybody's just intimidated by you. And like, yeah. It's like the beginning of Barbie, when it's sort of like you go girl mentality. And there's something humorous about that, but I also think there's something like really nice about it too. But this is hopping a little ahead. We'll talk about that a little more when we talk about some of the experiences that I've read about that sort of validation happening at the concert. Mm-hmm. But so obviously there are other global superstars, you know, plenty of them. But Taylor Swift feels a bit different. And I do think there are a few reasons. I think Taylor Swift is a bit more approachable than some of these, you know, that you think of like Beyonce or something. Like I'm so intimidated by Beyonce. Like I don't know what to make of her. I'm like, I'm kind of scared of her. But like Taylor, I you know, she's approachable. Like she's beautiful, but she's also got kind of this nerdy side. She has cats, like, you know, like she seems like, you know, you can relate to her a little bit more. And she's also publicly gone through so many transformations that there's like something for everybody. There's the country to pop to electric pop to acoustic folk, so on. So fans are dressing up in their favorite era, finding their niche even within the Swiftie community. So I have to ask, Rachel, are you dressing up for the Eras Tour? And if so, what is your era?
I am dressing up. I haven't finalized what I will be wearing, also because we've got a whole new era to come in between.
True. And so this
in terms of the one that I feel is the era that kind of best represents me, I'm still like 1989 is where I jumped on, and that feels like the one that I resonate most with. But I'm probably also fairly strongly a folklore girl, but I love all of them. I mean, I think I will probably be dressing up in Midnights. I have a dress already that has like the moon and the stars on it, so it feels like that's at least a straightforward option. But I will be keeping an eye out for any full on sequin outfits between now and then.
Yeah, you're thrift shopping. If something will jump out to you, but yeah, I mean, and certainly we can feel like different era. We can relate to different eras. Different, you know. I mean, I listen to Taylor Swift a lot, and like different, you know, albums are speaking to me at different times. Midnights is one that I didn't love when it first came out, and then I really like it now after a lot of like re-listen. Mm-hmm. So that also has happened. And like, I think like my favorite era is probably Lover, actually. It's just a great album. Like, I mean, even some of the ones that I thought were like, I wasn't as much of a fan of, again, the first time around, like with time, I have like an affection for them. But yeah, I love the aesthetic of that album. It's like the bubblegum thing. Like, I just love the whole thing. So it's like a lot of fun. And I love that she does that too, that there's like an aesthetic to each album. And, you know, there's like a real feel to it that is so consistent with the mood of the music too. It makes it just, it's just so fun.
Yeah, I think it's almost kind of a genius move to see each album as this quote-unquote era. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's not just an album and it's not just a sonic experience, but that there's a sort of cohesive look and feel to each album that has echoes with previous albums but is also its own new thing. I think it's a very like difficult thing to pull off, that she can sort of reinvent herself so regularly, and that, you know, she's almost put the expectation on herself that each album will be distinct and will be different in a new direction. But in some ways, that also gives her a huge amount of creative freedom. But it makes it so that she's an artist that is someone that you can talk about and in that way share. So this is another reason why I think she is so uniting for people, is that there's a lot to talk about. And absolutely, you can go into, I try to stay out of a lot of celebrity gossip, but I will say I keep abreast of what she's up to and what she's wearing and who she's with. But but even if you take that aside and you're just kind of left with the things that she sort of officially produces, whether that's music videos or the albums themselves or the tours, I think the way that she shares them makes them things that you can talk about. Like my friend Darina and I, it's almost like talking about fantasy football, because, you know, she has those things of like track five is always like a really emotionally sad track. So which is your favorite track five, or which era are you, like we've been discussing, or, you know, what's your favorite aesthetic, or do you feel like you're more like this or this, or, you know, there's always like different configurations that you can pull. Or, you know, with her re-records now, you can say like, okay, what are the, which album has the best bonus tracks from the new re-records, or whatever it is, that like, there's always things that you could kind of measure up or stack or contrast or relate to or identify with in different ways. And I think it makes it very fun and like a hobby. More than just listening to a song and enjoying a song for what it is, that there's like a whole world around it. And don't get me wrong, she's a brilliant businesswoman. Like, she's kind of an interesting person. Like you said, she is relatable. I think maybe the difference between her and Beyonce is she doesn't feel the need in some ways to cling to that air of mystery, or like, she doesn't share her whole personal life with the world, but at the same time, she allows herself to be goofy or relatable in those kinds of ways, which makes her more approachable. But she is an incredibly savvy businesswoman. And I think that that's also a good thing. I don't think that's a bad thing about her. But, you know, with each album comes a whole set of merchandise then. And so it's very smart. And I think it's a very shrewd business move. But it also makes it more relational. And I think when I was talking to you before, I think I used the word embodied for each one, that like, especially, you know, if you're a girl and interested in fashion, or a guy and interested in fashion, that like the way that you present yourself or express yourself, like each album is almost a new identity to try on for a little while, or a new kind of perspective on the world, or all of those things, that you can kind of embody the experience of this album for a little while and see how, like, does this fit with my personality, or is this more me, or is this less me? A really fun and like genuinely creative way of approaching music.
I think you're absolutely right on all those points. I mean, yes, she's a great businesswoman. She's also like, just her work ethic must just be insane. I mean, the amount of music that she's writing, the like quality of what she's coming out with. I mean, you just have to give her credit for that. And it's amazing what she's doing. And I think she understands fandom very well. You know, it reminds me of things from when I was a teenager and I would get really into a band, or I'd get really into something and you'd cut things out of magazines and put it on your planner and like things like that. That was like, it allowed you to try on identities and to just like enjoy it. It's just fun. Like, it's like playing dress up. It's enjoying yourself. And I think she gets that. And so she gives her fans like so many opportunities to play within this realm of creativity that she's created. So I think it's great.
I think, you know, in terms of how we think of it, we can think of it as very like a specifically her thing, that like every era is a new one, but it's also not. Like, switching genres is something that a lot of the great artists have done, and dressing up like your favorite artist is not totally new. Like, I always think of my dad talking about how he was just a huge David Bowie fan, and him and his cousins would dress up like David Bowie in rural Ireland in the 70s. Like, can you imagine that? Like, this is like, if you think you look crazy walking to the Eras tour in your Taylor Swift outfit, imagine walking down like middle of Ireland rural town in the 70s in your best attempt at a David Bowie getup.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, very true. And yeah, I mean, like, Bob Dylan, you know, he was famously booed when he went electric. He was a traitor to the folk cause and like all the politics that came with that. So I mean, And also people were upset with Taylor Swift when she changed from country. You know, I think now we're used to it, but I remember being having my origins there in the country world. People were like, oh, like, what is this? Like, you know, and I remember like listening to the country radio station being like, well, she's still our, you know, we still remember the country days. And now everyone's kind of like accepted it, but it wasn't without its, you know, pitfalls. And everybody, like when Reputation came out, everyone was like, what is she doing? You know, I mean, it was like, that was not a popular album or, you know, a decision she made, I guess, direction she made. I mean, I don't know what she could have done after the success of 1989, honestly, that would have, you know.
As someone who really loves Rep, I think, I think Reputation is actually a kind of genius move, but definitely not the one that was designed to go down most palatably. Like, I think she was very interesting in like, that like in some ways, rather than playing it safe, that actually the safe thing to do was to do something totally new.
Yeah, no, I mean, looking back now, I think it was very smart. I think at the time, we were all just like, whoa, like what's, you know, it just like was not expected. And this was sort of still early on, I guess, like in her evolution, because, you know, Red was like kind of borderline pop album. And so that it was like, she was still kind of in a certain understandable realm. And then, and then she kind of just, she went off and then, but then she was free, you know, then it was like, what will she do next? And she's done so many things, you know?
I think the difference now is that we've learned that we can trust her, that know, a new direction doesn't mean a new Taylor at the center of it, that like she's someone that we still relate to. And so, you know, she hasn't, even when she pushes the boat out in some areas, that she still has kept a kind of core to herself. And I was going to mention it a little bit earlier, and you know, I'm sure there'll be plenty of people who disagree with me on this. And, you know, as she's gotten older, she's definitely matured in some ways. And so I'm sure there are definitely, you know, performances or songs that, especially parents with young kids, I'm not saying that every single Taylor Swift song is appropriate for all ages, but I do think that she has kept, to a surprising degree, a sense of innocence, or a sense of kind of a lack of sexualization in some ways, that that is often very much present in a lot of other pop singers. And, you know, I'm not trying to be prudish. I think that like lots of pop singers at the moment do great work, but I do think that she has actually carved a space which is slightly to the side of a lot of the way that pop is generally performed these days. And I think in some ways that's also what helps it be a celebration of girlhood and like these things. Like, they're almost not performances of femininity for men, in what is normally portrayed by big advertising, you know, companies that want to sell a particular vision of women, that this is kind of women by women for women. And it can be beautiful and frivolous and fun and all of those things, but it's less about that kind of capturing a male gaze and more about celebrating womanhood. And I think through her different evolutions, you've kind of seen that she's maintained, even in different musical expressions, a sense of dignity or a sense of restraint or a sense of, you know, that it isn't just about descending into what everybody else is doing in pop or everybody else is doing in mainstream music.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Yes, I mean, and this, especially comparatively speaking, I would say like incredible restraint. And I get like kind of like a slumber party feel from Taylor Swift, you know, like, and not as much of like a nightclub feel. Do you know what I mean? It's like more like us gals, like having fun, you know, we're dressing up, we're having a good time. And so there's a certain sort of ease and generosity and, you know, ability to relax in those circumstances where you don't feel like where you dress up to go out and maybe meet some guys or whatever. Like, it's a different vibe than if you're all sort of competing with each other instead of like, we're all here, we're having fun together. And that definitely is the mood I would pick up on.
Yeah. And I would say, and I think because I know you've got two articles you want to talk about, this might actually lead into it, which is that I don't go to a lot of nightclubs, if any. But what the few occasions that I have actually been in the recent years, because there's a thing that travels around where a DJ does a set of Taylor Swift nights. Oh, and so I have been,
I want to be there. Gone to go.
I'll check if any are on when you're on
pilgrimage with bonus Swiftie nights.
And again, like you're saying, actually, it's one of the few times when I'm in that kind of nightlife space where it doesn't actually feel that same kind of amped up quality of performance in front of people, that it has more of that, like you said, that kind of sleepover. You know, you're with your friends, you're singing along, like you almost feel like people might bring hairbrushes to sing into while they're, you know, joining in with the music, that it has a very friendly, approachable feel to it. And that's one of the reasons why not only do I go to those nights because I like the music and I know the music and I think I'm going to enjoy it, but because I feel more comfortable with the type of people who go to Taylor Swift nightclubs.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, exactly. You're like, look, we're friends here. We're all Taylor Swift fans. Like, we get it. So, yeah, that does lead nicely into, I was going to talk about two articles I found on Substack that I will put in the show notes so you can read the whole thing. And it really focuses in on this idea of unity and connection. And they're both written by, interestingly, by mothers going to these concerts with their daughters, which I thought was really sweet and cool. And I think there's a lot too about generational connection that's happening with Taylor Swift, with a lot of moms and daughters, moms and sons too, maybe. You know, so I'm going to quote one here from Mia Freeman. These are two women who went to the Eras concert. So this is their on the ground experience. So she says, on the way, we met a mother and her 13-year-old daughter who had driven to Melbourne. They didn't have tickets, but they were dressed up and going to just sit outside the stadium to be part of it. We exchanged friendship bracelets. Everyone had them sneaking up their arms. And they were the connective tissue of this magical planet on which 96,000 of us landed for a few hours. I traded bracelets with some police officers, with the lady who sold me hot chips, and with numerous small children and dozens of women and girls of all ages. It was lovely. The atmosphere was like, well, it was like the opposite of how the internet is on any given day when people are screaming at one another, especially lately. Imagine being in a massive crowd where everyone was happy and gentle and kind, and everyone apologized if they accidentally bumped you or stood on your foot, even if the person whose foot got stood on would apologize, because everyone was just so deeply, wildly thrilled to be part of this incredible experience. So I think speaking really well to what we've been talking about. And I love how she says it's the exact opposite of how the internet is. And in such an online era, of which Taylor is clearly a part of as well, it is so refreshing, though, to think of all these people together in person, feeling this kind of unity and compassion and kindness for one another. What struck you about it?
Yeah, absolutely. That there's a gentleness to it that is missing from a lot of the ways that we interact online, potentially because, yeah, when you're in front of people, it's, you see their humanity. And especially when in an age which is sort of excluding children and younger family setups from more and more spaces, I think it's really nice. Like I said, I definitely think there are a couple of Taylor Swift songs which I think are like slightly less appropriate for kids. But for a 3.5-hour show, I think it is a beautiful thing to be able to share as a family, and that it is so so uplifting to see spaces where it can be multi-generational, and that it is showing a unity across ages, and that, you know, the experience of being like, it, let's say for this example, for being a girl, that like this is something that my mom connects with, and, you know, my teenage sister connects with, or, you know, my aunt, or whatever it is, that like these are things that have a common thread through them. And I was at, like I said, I feel like I'm name dropping all the concerts that I go to recently. I was
ousted as a real concert junkie. It's okay. It's out and about. We know now.
I went to a concert of an up and coming pop artist called Grit, who again has a more, I feel like, appropriate sound and lyric style for younger kids. And so there were kids at it, and it was the first concert that I've been to in a while in which there were, you know, small children at it. And again, it felt like there was an atmosphere that caused, which was more generous and more patient and wanted to have more space for younger people, which is such a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be so rare these days, but it does feel like it is actually really refreshing to see something that speaks to a huge age range and where a huge age range is actually welcome.
Yeah, very true. And I mean, that's something else I think that we don't really think about, but it's like with the sort of over-sexualization of so many pop stars, it's like that just automatically excludes, you know, a lot of younger people as well. So it's sort of alienating. So I think that the fact that at least thus far, Taylor Swift has sort of maintained, you know, this accessible persona, that her songs, you know, sometimes I'm like so disappointed when there's like an F word in a song, because it'll be like a really like just like nice song that I want to have on the back in the background, like, you know, with the kids around and like, you know, I think there are clean versions of all of them, but you know.
Yeah, the thing I will say about that is if you look for her clean version, actually, she's one of the few artists that will actually put effort into the clean version. Mm. So they're not just blanked out with the expletives, that she will actually put sometimes almost better lyrics in. So yeah. If there are parents who are looking for the clean versions, that they are actually, they've had time and effort put into them, which is nice.
Okay. Is there a clean version of Snow on the Beach? Is there a clean version of that one?
I don't know for certain. It
seems like so in the lyrics, and that's like, I really like that one a lot. So that's what I'm thinking of. I'm like, there's a clean version.
I think
of
there might be. You would be surprised. I know she did one for Ivy, mm-hmm. that was actually pretty good. So
yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. I recommend people read the article, because I think it was just a really cool to hear about just this mm-hmm. mood that was, you know, at this concert. Again, 96,000 people, and that the overwhelming feeling was one of connection and compassion. Like, that's pretty unique to me too. So I'm going to quote one more article called The Fellowship of Taylor Swift. And this is particularly interesting because I'm going to touch on how these concerts can be quite spiritual in nature for many people, and how this deep togetherness maybe is sort of filling a void in a, you know, lack of religion era. So very interesting thoughts here from the author Leslie Trovato. So I'm going to just quote from her. She writes, "The night I went at the Eras concert with my daughter in celebration of her 21st birthday last year was as close as I've come to that sort of spiritual experience. It wasn't the deep South, it was Nashville, but the air was so heavy with damp, it might as well been. There was no pastor on stage, but there was Taylor Swift. And there was no Bible being read. We had memorized the entire canon. The night when my daughter and I and 70,000 more gathered under a full moon for 6 hours must be discussed. I've been to a lot of concerts. Growing up in Los Angeles suburbs meant I had fairly easy access to every genre of music, every size of venue, every night of the year to hear live music. But the Eras Tour was unlike any I've attended. It's not uncommon for concerts to feel spiritual. I've been moved by my favorite songs, belted out into the night sky. But this night was different. Halfway through, I scanned the sea of bodies chanting in unison, folks not only knowing every word to a song, but anticipating every inflection, every subtle movement of the music. The unity, the pure cohesion among the throngs was remarkable. And I thought in that moment, churches would kill to have fellowship like this." So really interesting. What do you think, Rachel?
Yeah, I think there's two very interesting things going on there. There's the first thing, which is maybe like less validating, which is that like it reminds me, especially as a Catholic, why I love the sacraments. That mm-hmm. Sometimes when I am looking across at our Protestant brothers and sisters, they have wonderful worship sessions, but I do feel like the connection between that and a concert feels very kind of strange to me. Whereas, you know, knowing what the difference between the worship that I do in churches and with sacraments and having that distinction in my mind, I think is actually a beautiful and helpful thing, and means that I can come to something like this and see the spiritual side and know how it is different to how I worship God. But I, in a positive way, I do think it's beautiful to see that yearning for connection and how music is so tied to that, and that like the idea of us all praising you know, through music together is something that is very deep within our souls and has the power to move us and connect us and bring us together and lift our eyes upwards to more transcendent things. I think that is so beautiful, that and in some ways, like, it is a shame that we have to look to secular avenues to find it in our culture, but I don't think we should turn our nose up at finding it anywhere in this day and age.
Yeah, I kind of had to the same sort of dual reaction, which is part of me was like, well, that's like very sacrilegious. And like, you know, I don't know about, you know, like there's no Bible, but we're singing Taylor Swift and she's a preacher. Like, I don't know. It's also clearly like, I think the author, she's coming from a very sort of specific, I gathered, evangelical style background, which is sort of the worship style she's talking about as well. But yes, like it is important to understand also that like sort of the emotional highs that we can feel and often feel in a setting like a concert are not the same thing as our worship of God. So if you're not feeling that way at Mass this weekend, do not take that for any problem or deficiency in your worship. But again, also at the same time that like clearly this is like a longing in people, and that this sort of togetherness, this shared experience could be pointing people toward realizing maybe a spiritual lack in their lives of like, this is, I'm feeling something here I don't normally feel. What am I feeling? What am I seeking? And the other thing that struck me is I'm reading Jonathan Haidt's new book right now called The Anxious Generation about smartphones and social media. And he talks about how basically human beings are built for synchronous experiences, basically all of us doing one thing at the same time, you know, dancing together, talking together, like how little girls love clapping games, jump rope, like things like that. Like that's sort of what the delight we take is with doing things together as people. And online life is primarily defined, with the exception of something like what we're doing right now, which is a video call, we're talking to each other at the same time. But it's primarily defined by asynchronous experiences, which is, you know, different, that people are not in sync with each other. And I think that that's something that is brought up in both these articles, is that like, we're all singing together, we're dancing together, we're standing together, we're here together. And that sort of like, this is happening in time together is surprisingly unique here in the 21st century. So I think that that is certainly something important that's going on as well.
Yeah, that reminder that as well, that the rest of humanity is something that we want to be connected with, that the goal is not to put on our noise-canceling headphones and separate ourselves, that there is something better about experiencing this music live with so many other people than even sitting with your perfectly tuned headphones and hearing it on your own, that like, you know, there is a space for both, but that there is something extra emotionally intense about experiencing it with other people, with the people that you love, that you're able to bring, but then also seeing that there's like a world of people that are that there is an opportunity to have a relationship with, that you can look around and say, this is someone that I have something in common with. And that like, it's almost a good practice for ourselves to remember that, that like, we should be looking at the whole world that way, that this is a brother in Christ. This is somebody who is loved by God in the same way that we are. And so that you do have an intrinsic connection with all of humanity. And something as big as this reminds you that you're not so different from everybody else in the world that you don't have anything in common with them, that it's that actually maybe you've got things to share, and that there are threads of humanity that bind us all.
Yeah, absolutely. And in that same section in the Hype book, he talks about an experiment they did where like they had two groups, one wearing headphones that would basically keep them out of sync with everybody else. And people trusted the people who were out of sync much less at the end of the exercise, whereas the people who had been dancing and singing in unison, you trusted them more. So, I mean, I think quite literally, you know, spiritually and instinctually, biologically, we're like building trust with experiences like this. So Taylor Swift is a force for good. That's all I'm saying. She's bringing trust and unity and connection around the globe. And I'm thrilled about it. So, yeah, I enjoy her music, but what I'm enjoying is stories like this about bridging divides, sharing in cultural experiences, and just like having fun, having some joy in our lives, dressing up. You know, I think that we don't always remember how important it is. Just go have fun. So I feel like you're with me, Rachel, that like Taylor Swift is a force for good. But do you have some concluding thoughts sort of about what she can offer our culture?
Yeah, I mean, I would totally agree. I think a force for good. And like you said, I am really here for reminding the world that fun is not necessarily frivolous, that it is a good thing and a beautiful thing to be able to go out and enjoy the goodness that is on offer to the world, and that that is also part of God's gift to us, that like that we have music and concerts and friends, and that like that these are things to be cherished. And like I mentioned, we've kind of come out of the pandemic. There was so much time when we spent apart. I think it's really encouraging to me to see people come out of that and then invest in precisely those things that we probably noticed a lack of then.
Definitely. So I normally conclude by asking for something, some recommendation, bringing wonder. But in light of the topic, I'm going to ask what your favorite Taylor Swift song is.
I'm going to say, I've mentioned that I'm a 1989 girl through and through in some ways. So I am going to pick one of the songs from the deluxe version of the original album. So not one of the new bonus songs, but it was a bonus song on the original album called You Are In Love. I don't know whether she's ever said it, but I remember seeing an interview where she was talking about when she started working with Jack Antonoff, like one of the first times she met him, they both bonded over the fact that they loved this song called Only You by a band called Yaz or Yazoo. It's got two names, whether you're in England or America. But that song, Only You, was very moving for them. And it's also one of my favorite songs. And I think the two songs sonically sound very similar to me. I think that one was very much trying to draw on the experience of listening to the other one. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, You Are In Love from 1989 is probably my favorite Taylor Swift song.
It would be such a great opportunity to play her music throughout this episode, but I would be kicked off all platforms. I did that. She is, rightly so, protective of her copyright. We'll see if this happens by the time it airs. Chris has said that maybe he could do some covers of at least inspired by, so we'll see if we have some music mm-hmm. to inspire us here. But you mentioned it earlier, I think Wildest Dreams is actually my favorite song. It was interesting you brought that up. Just that's sort of the one I always go back to. I think it's very musically interesting, and it's and I love the music video. It's sort of out of Africa inspired mm-hmm. with one of my favorite movies, so love that. But yeah, thank you so much, Rachel. I could just keep talking about this, and this is just energized me for the rest of the day, and I'm definitely going to be listening to Taylor Swift the rest of the day. So I just so appreciate you taking the time and your wonderful insights on this topic.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to this so much.
Here there is something more than just a transient experience.
It's about being. It's about the things that matter to me. It's about the white spaces between the paragraphs.
Then God said, "Let there be light."
It's a mistake you always made, Doc, trying to love a wild thing.